People have been investigating the mysteries of the moon ever since the invention of the telescope, and it's the only other body in space that humans have set foot on. But how much do we really know about Earth's only satellite? Joining us for this week's Please Explain Look at the Moon is Dr. Juliana Gross, a research scientist in the American Museum of Natural History's Department of Earth and Planetary Sciences. Hello, welcome to our show.
Hi. Thanks,
and we invite our listeners to join the conversation. You can call us at 212-433-9692. Write us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. So, Juliana, is the moon geologically similar to Earth or any of the other planets in our solar system?
Yes, it is. The moon has layers just like Earth, so it has a crust and a mantle and a core. So it's a differentiated body. It's not a planet because it doesn't revolve around the Earth. It revolves around the Earth.
Not around the sun.
The sun, yes. But we call it a planetary body because it has made out of these layers. And the rock types that we have on the moon are actually very similar to the Earth rocks. So if you look up into the sky, you see two different areas on the moon. The one area that is kind of like smooth and really dark, and then you see these really bright areas. And the dark areas, they were once lava flows. We have lava flows on Earth, and they cooled and crystallized to a rock type that's called basalt. And we have that rock type on Earth as well. Our ocean floors, for example, are made out of that rock type. And volcanoes on Hawaii, they produce basalt.
So is that why one of the theories for the formation of the moon is that it just was a part of the Earth that broke off?
Yes. So the current model is that there was this giant impact between two planets. One was the proto-Earth, and the other one was a planet that was probably the size of Mars, and that planet was called Theia. And they collided with each other. And through that collision, a lot of debris got blasted into the orbit of that what later became Earth. And then this debris, this cloud of superheated material, then accreted to form the moon. But we didn't know that before the Apollo missions. So the Apollo missions actually helped us a lot to learn about the rock types. And based on that, we came up with this giant impact theory.
And Earth is really the merger of two planets, Theia and Earth?
Yes, yes.
Because otherwise, where would Theia be right now?
Right. So basically, if you have these two protoplanets, they crash into each other, they mix, and they throw out this cloud of debris, and then this cloud accretes to make the moon, and those two protoplanets combine, and that's now Earth.
Now, we have been investigating the moons of other planets. Are they similar to our moon?
Not really. So Mars, for example, has moons that are more like asteroids. They were captured. And then some of the gas giants have moons that are also considered planetary bodies because they have seismic activity and volcanoes. But they're probably composed of different materials. Like Europa has a lot of water ice, most likely, probably somewhere underneath the surface.
Do they all have the same elements? The moon would have the same elements as Earth because it comes from Earth. But are there elements out there that we may not know about that might be on other planetary
So all the elements in our solar system we know about from carbonaceous chondrites, the very first rocks that form from the solar disk, the nebula disk. And by studying those, we know a lot about the material that was available in our solar system to form all the planets. So yes, most of the planets have the same materials. There might have been different ratios of those elements and materials on different bodies, like oxygen isotopes, for example. The ratio of isotopes varies depending on where in the solar system it formed. And that's one of the criteria we use when we have rocks that are not from Earth to figure out where from the solar system they actually come from.
I mean, sometimes we find rocks that have landed on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always wondered, how did they know where it came from?
Yeah, that's so when we actually manage to find a meteorite, we look at the chemistry and the isotopic composition. And oxygen isotopes, for example, are a fingerprint of where in the solar system the material came from. And since we actually went to the moon and got samples back, we can compare the samples from the moon to the meteorites. We have space rovers on Mars that can chemically analyzed those rocks. So we also know oxygen isotopes from Mars. We have very primitive meteorites, chondrites, that basically form from the solar disk very early. They never made it to be a planet. And then we can compare meteorites to those ratios. And if they have a similar ratio to one of the groups that we identified, we know where it comes from. But let's say Mercury, because we don't have an actual sample from it, because we didn't go there with the rover, if we would have a meteorite from Mercury, there's no way of telling if it really is from Mercury or not.
My guest is Dr. Juliana Gross of the American Museum of Natural History's Department of Earth and Planetary Sciences. We are talking about the moon on today's Please Explain. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Again, you can give us a call at 212-433-9692 if you want to join the conversation, or you can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. What's the dusty substance that Neil Armstrong left footprints in when he stepped on the moon?
That's pretty much grind up rock. So it's dust and soil, what we call. So the surface of the moon, when the moon first just formed, it has had a crust made out of a mineral called plagioclase.
Is also on Earth?
Yes. It's a very common mineral on Earth. And because of the bombardment that is going on the moon over time, like still today, all the rocks get crushed up on the surface. So it's called impact gardening. You basically pulverize the surface and you turn everything into really fine grains. And so you have dusty material, basically, made out of rock. And that's what Neil Armstrong stepped into.
Is the moon hit by meteorites and other debris more frequently than Earth is?
No. We get hit a lot as well. But we have an atmosphere that protects us. So if there is an asteroid or a meteorite entering the Earth's atmosphere, it produces a lot of light, and that's what we call a meteor or shooting star. And most of those little particles, they just glow up in the atmosphere and never reach the surface. And if they're really small, like dust size, we don't even see them. So we will only see bigger stuff. And the moon gets constantly bombarded by that as well. Doesn't have an atmosphere, so
not at all, not even a little bit.
It has a teeny, 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 tiny one that is so thin and so little that it's pretty much vacuum. But yes, it's not enough to slow down any type of material. And all these little particles, even dust-sized particles, bombard the moon, the surface, and then grind up rock types that are there and minerals and make micro craters and produce heat from the impact and glue stuff back together.
Now, after this collision, mm-hmm. and then the moon is formed, mm-hmm. was it in a similar orbit to what it is in now?
I believe so. Yeah, that's, I think, a question for an astronomer, and I'm not quite sure. But there are a lot of constraints that these computer models have taken into account, and one is the rotation period and the axes of the moon to the Earth. And so if you feed all that into a model, the computer can calculate how much it had to change over time in order to be what it is today.
Well, the Earth goes in an elliptical orbit around the sun, and the moon is pretty much tied to the Earth. So mm-hmm. Wherever we are, the moon is really maintains that relationship to the Earth?
Yes, yes. The moon, though, is going away from Earth very slowly with 4 centimeters per year about. And it doesn't have a perfectly circular orbit. It's also a little bit elliptical. And that's sometimes why we get these supermoons where the moon is closer to Earth than other times when it's further away.
So it's really closer to Earth.
Yeah, just a couple percent closer. So you wouldn't be able to see it just with your bare eyes. It's just like 1 or 2% that would look closer. But
that would have to change the gravitational pull, wouldn't it?
Probably a little bit, yeah.
And then the moon pulls back away? Is mm-hmm. being pulled back by the sun or by outer space?
You have the circular movement. You have centrifugal forces, and that kind of like pushes the moon away from Earth. It will probably go away, and then at some point it reaches the maximum, and then it will come closer again.
How would the Earth be different if we didn't have a moon or if we didn't have the one that we have?
It's a good question. We would not have tides, obviously, because the tides are tied to the moon.
If we had two moons like some planets,
right?
We'd have
well, then
stronger
it depends
tides.
On, probably
surfing it would be up.
Yes, exactly. It also depends on like if we would have two moons, how do they rotate around Earth? Are they in opposite directions? Are they close to each other? Because then they would combine the gravitational forces that pull on our planet.
Let's take some calls. Okay, our number here is 212-433-9692. And Sarah from New Jersey, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon. Actually, your guest touched on my question. I was curious to know how the moon affected the ocean tide, and in particular, why some high tides are higher and some low tides are lower.
Okay, that's a very good question. So the moon's gravitation pulls on Earth, so it's a constant pulling away. So the water flows towards the moon, and if the moon is in alignment with the sun, so you have the sun, the moon, and the Earth, because the sun has gravitational pull on our planet as well, if they're in alignment, the sun and the moon combine their gravitational force and pull even harder on our oceans. And that's when we get these spring tides, so-called spring tides.
So that's the gravitational pull of the sun?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What about other planets? They have gravitational pulls. Are they too weak to affect Earth?
Probably, yes. The sun is just such a massive, you know, star, and the moon is so close to us that those gravitational forces just overshadow everything else.
Well, the sun affects so many different things.
Yes.
Beyond the obvious. I mean, it affects us in radio, for example.
Oh, yes, it does.
Whenever there's a lot of activity on the surface of the sun, then radio people have to worry about whether the signal is going to go out okay.
Yes.
Let's take another call. This one is from Yehuda from the Van Wyck Expressway. I hope you have Bluetooth or something.
Yes, always hands-free here.
Okay, go ahead.
Try and keep it safe in traffic.
What's your question or your
just
comment?
Just a question about why at some points during the month the moon lies low in the sky and is very bright, large, and red.
Okay. So when the moon is low in the horizon, the light that gets reflected from the lunar surface and reaches the Earth has to travel to a lot more of the atmosphere than if it would be 9 degrees above us. And light gets reflected from particles in our atmosphere, and then only the red or yellow or orange wavelength actually reach our eyes, and therefore sometimes the moon looks red. And if it's like right above us, 90 degrees into the sky, it looks white again. So that really has something to do with our atmosphere. And if you have a lot of pollution in the atmosphere, you know, the brighter red the moon would look like. So if you have the areas where all these wildfires are right now, if you would look into the sky there, the moon would probably look red.
What about the blue moon? Is it really blue?
No, the blue moon has nothing to do.
I looked up, it didn't look blue to me.
No, it has nothing to do with the color. That is something that historically is called the third full moon in a season of four moons, full moons. That's called the blue moon. And that has something to do with how the moon rotates around its axis and how long it takes to circle Earth. Because a lunar month basically is 29.5 days. But our Earth month is 30 or 31 days. So we have 365 days in a year, and if you divide that by 29.5 lunar month, you come up with 12.3. So you have 12.3 lunar month in an Earth year. So you have 12 full moons plus 0.3 of a full moon. So the next year you have, again, 12.3, plus now you have the leftover plus 3.3. So after 3 years, you will end up with an additional full moon, and that would be the blue moon then.
Ah, it's almost like a leap year, except it's a moon, a yes. Whole moon.
Yes.
Okay, let's take another call. This one is from Paige. Hi, Paige. From what? Forest Hills? Or Far Hills? Hi, Paige.
Hi.
How old are you, Paige? Paige, are you there?
Yes.
Yeah, how old are you?
Six.
Okay, what's your question?
Hi, Paige.
What's a harvest moon?
I think that has something to do with the moon seasons and the phases. So when the moon is towards the sun, some of the areas of the moon get lit and others don't. And we call that waxing, when the moon gets bigger, basically. More of the surface gets shined on by the sun. And then at some point you have the full moon, and then it goes, the light goes away, so less of the moon surface get shined on, and that we call that waning, until we have the new moon, which when we can't see the moon at all, because the backside of the moon then gets lit.
I don't know if that answers your question, but thank you for calling us. And the moon always presents the same face to Earth, doesn't
yes.
it?
Yes, that is correct.
So it when it goes, it doesn't really rotate in the way that Earth rotates, does it? It just always remains in a fixed position in relation to Earth?
Yes, it is. The moon rotates around its own axis, though, just like Earth, but it takes a lot more time to do that. So the rotation around its own axis is pretty much the same as it takes the moon to revolve around Earth once. So the moon rotates, but really slowly, and that is why we only are faced with just one side. And that's a really easy experiment you could do at home. If you have, let's say, a chair, you put it in the middle of the room, and that's going to be the Earth, and then you are going to be the moon, and you have a window in that room, that's going to be the sun. So if you stand behind the chair and you face the window, the people that are sitting on the chair or being on Earth would see the front side of your body, right? Now, if you revolve around the chair, around the moon, but you do not rotate around yourself, you will always face the window. So by the time you are between the window and the chair, the people on the chair will actually see your back. And we do not see the far side of the moon. We always see the same side. So if you rotate yourself, but really slowly, so that you're rotating around yourself once, but at the same time you circle the chair once, that's what the moon does.
My guest is Dr. Juliana Gross, who's a research scientist in the American Museum of Natural History's Department of Earth and Planetary Sciences. We're talking about the moon on today's Please Explain, and taking your calls at 212-433-9692, or you can write us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. We will be back with more of your calls and questions after we take a little break. Stay with us. And we are back with Dr. Juliana Gross, who is a research scientist in the American Museum of Natural History's Department of Earth and Planetary Sciences. We are talking about the moon on today's Please Explain. And we invite your calls, 212-433-9692. People have been writing to us on our show page at WNYC.org and on Facebook and Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. And Martin in Sunnyside writes, why doesn't the moon have an atmosphere? Would it ever be possible to have breathable air on the moon?
That's a very good question. The moon's gravity is very, very low. It's 6 times lower than on Earth. So if there was an atmosphere at some point, the moon is just simply not strong enough to keep it close to its surface. So even if we, for some miracle reason, find something to produce an atmosphere, a breathable atmosphere on the moon would not be able to actually keep it. So the only option we would have if we want to colonize the moon is, I don't know, maybe build big domes and then create an atmosphere inside those domes to keep the pressure up.
And of course, CBS has done a whole show about that.
Oh, great.
People living inside of a dome, but not on the moon. Well, but we've done biospheres, uh-huh. which would be the equivalent, wouldn't
yes,
it?
Yes, exactly.
Larry and Nyack ask on our show page, does the moon affect Earth's tectonic plate movements? Could it have an effect on volcanic activity?
That's a good question, and
you don't know the answer.
I don't really know the answer. I would guess no, because the gravitational forces is probably not strong enough. But I'm not sure.
Well, Earth has its own forces that are at work all the time.
Plus, plate tectonic is more driven by hot material rising and cold material sinking. It's like if you eat miso soup and you let it stand for a little while, all those white particles make these convection cells, and that's basically what Earth does. So if the moon wasn't there or was stronger, I'm not sure how much it would affect plate tectonic.
Let's take some calls. Jeff from what is it? Warren, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Yes, I'd like to know if in the future, if we were ever able to establish a moon base, would we be able to mine tritium from the moon? And the second part would be if there is enough water on the moon to sustain such a facility.
Is there any water on the moon right now?
Actually, there is, yes. Yes, we did find water in the permanently shaded areas of the moon, close to the poles. We don't know exactly how much water there is, so we would have to have some robotic missions to go and measure the content and in what form the water is there. Is it water ice, or is it bound to minerals, or is it beneath the surface? And I think it would be possible to have a colony on the moon. We would just have to be very smart in mining the water and getting enough so we can actually live there.
Well, but then there's the other side. You're taking minerals from the moon. You're changing the nature of the moon, aren't you?
Yeah, you would. You know, we do the same thing on Earth.
Yeah, so. and we're paying for it to some degree, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
Thank you so much. Well, when you start hearing about fracking on the moon, Jeff, you know, we'll do another show on that.
Yes, thank you very much.
And our next caller is Barry.
Yes.
Hi.
Hi,
Barry.
How are you?
I'm well.
I was just wondering, you said before that things do hit the moon. I was wondering, is it possible that something big enough to destroy it would hit it? And
because
we're
possible? we're concerned about asteroids and meteors hitting the Earth
right.
Big enough to cause real problems. After all,
yes.
we lost the dinosaurs as a result of a previous
yep,
hit.
That's right. So technically, that is possible. Yes.
Wow. What would happen if we lost the moon, and how would that affect us and
whole
explosion and everything? It would be awful, right?
Yes, it would be. I mean, if the moon, it would be an extremely big object, and I'm pretty sure that we would spot it long before it would actually hit. If the moon would ever break apart, it would cause a lot of debris. It would probably rain up onto the Earth, so a lot of impact craters will generate a lot of heat, and so in the end, we would all die. So hopefully that doesn't happen.
So let's hope it doesn't happen. What is the temperature on the moon? It doesn't have an atmosphere, so should I assume that it's always the same?
No, it actually fluctuates quite. So if during the day it's quite hot, it's about 107 degrees Celsius. That's about the temperature. So you could boil water on the moon just from that temperature. And during the night, it's minus 153 degrees Celsius, so it's extremely cold. So they're quite big temperature variations. And if you look at the shaded, permanently shaded areas on the moon and near the poles, the temperature can drop to minus 230 degrees, which is almost absolute zero. So all the water that happens to go into this permanently shaded areas will get cold trapped. That's what we call these areas, cold traps.
That's because that is the temperature of outer space?
Yeah, pretty much.
Here is John from Paramus, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I'd like to know why during the day can you see the moon, especially in the morning? Like, I think I saw it this morning. As the sun comes up, the moon is still out there, and some days you can't see it.
Mm-hmm. That has something to do with the light reflection of the moon. So if the moon is in a position that the sun is reflecting on it during our daytime, the moon is so bright that the light can still go through our atmosphere even though the sun is out, and we can still see it. If the moon is in a different position in respect to Earth and the sun, then we cannot see it.
Thank you so much for your call. Peter from Glen Ridge, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Does a pessimist see the moon as half empty?
In what sense?
Oh, that's a joke. No, it led to my question that I have about the... If I put a glass of water on the moon...
Yes.
Would it evaporate?
Yeah, it would probably boil off because there's no atmosphere to hold the water back. So if you would put water in an instrument that has vacuum, it also will boil off. Yes.
But if it boils and there's no atmosphere to absorb it...
Mm-hmm. It goes out into outer space.
Oh, it would go out into outer space.
Yes.
And if there's enough water, it'll put out the sun.
All right.
I figured, Peter, if you're going to make jokes, I'm going to make jokes of equal cleverness. Okay, thank you so much for your call. And Miles from White Plains, hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Yes, hi, Miles.
Hello. My question is, if the moon suddenly or got hit by a series of asteroids or whatever and got bigger than our Earth, what would happen to the gravitational pull?
If it gets bigger than the Earth, well, then the gravitational pull gets really, really strong, and we would get extremely high tides, and because of the tidal forces, or the gravitational pull that we have, our planet would probably also start to heat up on the interior, so we would maybe get a lot more volcanic activity than we see now.
Now, Miles, would not be
a good thing.
How old are you, Miles?
11.
Are you planning to write science fiction books?
I'm not sure.
Well, you could become a scientist. Those are really good questions that you're asking.
Why, thank you.
And we thank you for your call. Has there been any talk about sending another mission up to the moon? I know the United States has pretty much eliminated our space program.
Right.
Or when we are sending things up, it'll be robotic. But have other countries talked about following our lead?
As far as I know, lunar scientists or planetary scientists in general really like the idea of going back to the moon. So there are a lot of proposals out for missions to go back to the moon to analyze maybe the regolith or this really, really teeny tiny atmosphere and the dust particles in the atmosphere. But as far as I know, those missions are all proposed, and whether they really get funded and be able to build and fly, that's a political question, I think.
Dan from Suffolk County, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, thank you very much for taking my call. I'm calling in reference to helium-3. I believe that that's a compound on the moon that is not on the Earth. And it's we're running out of helium on the Earth, so how does that work?
I'm not quite sure if I understand your question.
Well, the compound helium-3, is that a true compound, or am I making it up?
No, that is a true component, yes. But it's very, there's not very much there.
Okay, because I thought there were going to be mining expeditions going to the moon to mine helium-3.
I believe it when I see it.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Thank you. How did scientists discover ice on the moon? Was this something that our astronauts found, or is this something that we have discovered just through looking through telescopes?
Well, the astronauts, when they brought back all the rocks, they were pretty much what we call bone dry. Of course, we looked for water, and water can be bound in minerals, water-bearing minerals, or as ice. We didn't find any of those in the Apollo samples. There are a couple space missions, spacecrafts that orbit the moon and look at the light that gets reflected off the surface, like the Clementine mission. And that light gets absorbed by minerals or other solid material like ice. And then you get specific absorption features from that light back. And in the polar regions, we found absorption bands that are very similar to hydroxyl OH, which is a component of water. So we do think that there is water on the poles. It's just a question in what form it is there.
And there's water on Mars as well. So is water more common in the planetary system than we might have imagined originally?
Yes.
I mean, they suggest oxygen and hydrogen,
mm-hmm,
obviously.
Exactly. So there are strong features on Mars that suggests that there was at once flowing water, but on Mars we also have, from the meteorites that we can look at, we have water-bearing minerals that can only grow when there is water around in the magma from which they come from. So yes, there is water there too.
A number of callers have wondered why the moon looks bigger on the horizon.
That is actually an optical illusion. Your brain is just tricking you to think it's bigger because you have something to compare it to. So if there is houses and trees in the foreground, your brain thinks the moon is a lot bigger. But if it's like way up high in the sky, you can't compare it to anything, so it looks smaller. If you would take a picture of the moon near the horizon and the same picture a couple hours later up in the moon and you measure that diameter, it would be the exact same.
We have virtually no time, but if there was something, a mystery that could be solved right now, about the moon, what would you want it to be?
I would like to know whether the cataclysm, the heavy bombardment, was just a really strong peak, or whether it was a continuous range of bombardments, which that has some influence on our planet as well, and especially life on our planet.
Dr. Juliana Gross, research scientist at the American Museum of Natural History's Department of Earth and Planetary Sciences, thank you so much for being on today's Please Explain.
Thank you for having me.
On Monday's show, Gerard Lordahl takes your calls on gardening matters and shares tips on how to get the most out of your plants as the weather starts to get cooler. And then director James L. Friedman talks about his documentary Glickman, about the Jewish-American athlete who was banned from the 1936 Berlin Olympics and went on to become a revered sportscaster. And he'll be joined by former senator and former basketball player Bill Bradley, who is featured in the film. Paul Binder describes founding the Big Apple Circus and what it's like to work under the Big Top, plus a look at epigenetics and how our social lives can affect our genes. The Leonard LoPage Show is produced by Blakely Schick, Julia Corcoran, and Jessica Miller. Melissa Egan is the executive producer. Debbie Darcher is at the audio controls. We had help today from Ankita Sood. I'm Leonard LoPage, your host. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday.